The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Come on, time for our favorite show.
Welcome to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. In our show, we'll talk about your best friend, from the dogs that are specially trained to help others to training and care for the dogs that are important members of our family. Now, here is your host, Pamela Hill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Dogs Rock Radio. This is your host, Pam Hill, and I am so happy that you are joining us today to kick off a show whose intention is really just to be informative, fun, and entertaining by celebrating the unique human bonds shared with our canine companions. And I know that everyone listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. So for the kickoff of this new show, we're heading to Ojai, California to talk with the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation's Executive Director, Deborah Tosh. We will get an update on the beautiful new National Training Center they're building, talk about the well-earned accolades this great organization is getting, catch up on some recent deployments, and talk about what comes next for the Search Dog Foundation, or SDF. And of course, no show with the SDF would be complete without getting the latest and greatest update on our sponsor dog, Little Jackson. Many of you may not realize that I and my business are sponsoring a search dog named Jackson. You can find out more information and look at his little cute pictures by going to riskpa.com. So now on to our esteemed guest. With 15 years of experience in search and rescue, Deborah Tosh served as the FEMA certified canine search specialist with her SDF trained search dog Abby as a part of California Task Force 1. She was deployed to the World Trade Center on 9/11, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, and the La Conchita mudslide near Santa Barbara, as well as many other urban and wilderness emergencies, all while acting as the SDF program director. In 2005, Deborah retired from active service to succeed as the SDF's executive director. She also serves on the FEMA canine subgroup and is a FEMA search team testing evaluator. So welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So happy to have you. And why don't we start just by talking a little bit about the foundation, just in case there are folks listening that didn't listen in onto the first couple of shows that you guys participated in. So just tell us a little bit about what's the mission of the SDF?
Sure. Well, the mission of the Search Dog Foundation is to strengthen disaster response in America. And we do that by producing highly skilled canine firefighter disaster search teams to search for victims of natural disasters and terrorist attacks.
And how has it actually started?
Well, actually, it was founded in 1996 by a retired school teacher, Wilma Melville, after she deployed to the Oklahoma City bombing. And when she was there, there was one survivor found by a search dog, but to her, it was very clear that America needed a lot more canine disaster search teams. At the time, there were only 15 certified teams in the entire country. So she decided to come back and do something about that. So she started the Search Dog Foundation to meet this need.
And Wilma, go to the website and look up Wilma, because she is a force of nature. One of the greatest honors of my
life. Amazing woman.
She is amazing. She's really one of the greatest honors of my life is meeting her. So now, what's unique about the SDF? How's it different?
Well, one of the things that differentiates us is that we actually rescue dogs and train them. You know, so we find most of our dogs from shelters and breed rescue groups. And then we rescue them and turn them into rescuers. Another thing is that we provide these trained canines to the fire departments at no cost. And then we actually also, once we give the dog to the handlers, the firefighter handlers, we provide ongoing training and we support them throughout the working life of the dog.
Wow, that's something. And these are firefighters, right? These go to firefighters and fire departments, not to other emergency services personnel as a general rule.
Well, as a general rule, it's firefighters. We have found that most of the task forces are made up primarily of firefighters anyway, and the firefighters also come with the skills required to be on a task force in addition to, you know, the skills you need as a canine handler. And so they just fit right into that chain of command, and they're also very used to seeing things that may, you know, everybody wouldn't be able to deal with on deployments.
Right,
so
absolutely.
Emotionally, they're more, you know, prepared for that.
Right. Now, so there were 15 to start with when Wilma went to the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, what about the statistics since then? How many teams have you guys actually trained?
Well, right now there's about 250 in the country, FEMA-certified teams. The Search Dog Foundation has actually produced 131 certified teams since its inception, and we currently have 73 that are active right now.
Isn't that something? And they're all over the place, it looks like.
They are. We have teams in California, Florida, Nebraska, New York, Oklahoma, Texas, Utah, and our latest is Virginia.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think little Ivan was put there, right? I think I remember seeing that on your website. So
he was.
Yeah, I actually remember. He was one of the dogs that was in running for the, I think I had like four finalists that was in running. And then my Facebook friends actually voted Jackson in. So that's how I actually remember Ivan specifically. So it was really a lot of fun to do that. And I recall from Wilma saying that, and I don't know where you guys are at with this, that you were actually getting requests from Europe as well and around the world to train their dogs as well. Any thoughts of putting another, you know, SDF training center someplace else or just bringing those folks here to train?
Oh, that's a good question. We do get requests from all over the world. However, right now we're primarily just staying in the United States as we build out the training center. But at some point, that is certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I tell you, when you have a formula that works.
Yes. Well, right now, and I know we'll talk about the training center, but I think it's more efficient to bring teams here and help them that way.
Yeah, I would certainly think so. We're all the best, and most qualified trainers are as well. So,
exactly.
And they have to meet FEMA, you know, which is a U.S. thing, a FEMA certified standard. So, now where all of these teams been deployed? I'll tell you again, this, the searchdogfoundation.org website has just fascinating information on the ways that, you know, in places these dogs have been deployed. But can you give us a kind of a thumbnail sketch of that?
Sure. Our teams have been deployed 112 times. The major disasters are, you know, the World Trade Center, Hurricane Katrina, the Haiti earthquake, Japan earthquake and tsunami, tornadoes in Oklahoma, there's been mudslides, building collapses, train wrecks, and then also missing person searches. So there's a lot of uses for these dogs, whether it's a large deployment like 9/11 or just a single building collapse, which of course to the family of people involved, that's a big one for them as well.
Now, so prior to SDF, what were some of the issues with the way that dogs were being trained, or were there really even issues?
Well, I wouldn't call them issues. Just like anything in this, world, you learn as you go along. And prior to the Oklahoma City bombing, people were, attempting to do this on their own. And they would start with puppies, so right away you have a year that, you're working with that puppy, and at the end of that time, you never knew if it was even going to be the right dog or not. And so then you would possibly have to get another one, and then you were struggling to learn how to do this on your own with nobody showing you because there just weren't enough, wasn't enough experience. So when Wilma decided to use a professional trainer, that made a big difference because then you could focus on the human part of the team because the canine already had been taught those skills. Mm-hmm. Another thing is the screening process back then. People didn't really understand completely what it really took to end up with a strong search dog. And so as the years go, you know, go on and go on, people learn and they start to share that information. They all, back then, they didn't even think about using rescued dogs. You had to go out and get one from a breeder or, you know, it was almost all puppies. And right. So when people started realizing how wonderful these rescue dogs are, you know, that's made a big difference in this country. And now, not only for disaster search, but other types of detection are now also using rescue dogs. So we're very proud that, you know, we showed that that could be done.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys have really set a trend. I'm, you know, kind of get a lot of those feeds, and it seems like they're probably the vast majority of these are really looking for rescue dogs specifically. So I think that you guys, that is something you should be very, very proud of.
Yeah, and back then, they were taking 3 years to get a dog certified. That was the normal. And so, you know, by using the rescue dogs and by using a professional trainer, we actually cut that down, you know, to about a year.
Wow, that's really something. And that means, you know, how many more you can get out each year. So that's fantastic. Now, the SDF was recently honored with the first top-rated awards of 2014 from great nonprofits. So first, congratulations. And tell us about that. That is just so great.
Now, we work very hard at that. You know, we really do everything we can to steward our donors' money, you know, to the best of our ability. And the great nonprofits is a... just, you know, they go out there and they rate nonprofits and they tell us if we're doing a good job or not.
And apparently you are. It's not surprising. I've met just about everyone that's a core of the group, and I've always been just extremely impressed with everyone. Now, it seems like there are a lot of ways to help SDF, and how do we stay on top of these opportunities?
You know, the best way is there's a few things. One is going to our website, searchdogfoundation.org, and there's a place on there that tells all the different ways you can help. We also have a Facebook, which just search for National Disaster Search Dog Foundation, and you can find us on Twitter, which is Search Rescue Dog. But if the website has the links to those, and it tells you how you can, different ways you can volunteer, how you can donate, it's all on there.
Yeah, I absolutely love your Facebook and Twitter feeds because they really give you up to minute. And sometimes there are things that are closing within a day or two. And so it's a great opportunity to really stay on top of things. So, Deborah, we have to go to break now. But when we come back, we're going to start talking about the dogs, my favorite topic.
Excellent.
So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with Deborah Tosh, and we'll be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Voice America presents a new kind of health awareness talk show, the Sharon Kleina Hour, Health, Environment, and the Power of Water. Show host Sharon Kleina interviews leading scientists to discover how each of us can become proactive in protecting our personal health environment in an increasingly unhealthy world. Every show offers new information that could save your life. The Sharon Kleina Hour is health from an environmental perspective, your ultimate source for a personal environmental lifestyle. Listen Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel and Wednesdays at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You
are listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill, and I'm here with the wonderful Deborah Tosh from the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation. Deborah, I actually skipped over one thing I wanted to ask you in regard to contributing to the Search Dog Foundation. I'd read about Amazon Smile and that it actually donates a percentage of your Amazon purchases to SDF every time you place an order. Is that still going on, and how does it work?
Oh, it most certainly is, and Amazon's doing a wonderful thing. You just place an order like you normally would, but you put Smile, when you go to Amazon.com, you put Smile in there, and it actually has all of the products that you would normally buy anyway. And so at that point, you choose the organization that you want the half a percentage of your purchase to go to, and we are registered as one of them. So if you put in Search Dog Foundation, then monthly, we just get a check in the mail.
That is so fantastic. And, you know, who doesn't live on Amazon?
I myself have just done it, so I know it works.
I buy just about everything on Amazon, so I think that just what a wonderful thing. So you go to Amazon and just put, I assume it's probably Amazon.com/smile or something like that, or just
Correct. Type
it in. Yeah, wonderful. Okay, so let's start talking about the dogs. Of course, that was what all the questions I did ask listeners ahead of time. But first, do you guys find them or do you recommend them? Can somebody actually donate a dog? I know that these are rescue dogs, but how do you find them?
Well, we do have people that go to the shelters for us, you know, looking for dogs that have the right characteristics. We also have, you know, our own staff that goes there. We train shelters to recognize those traits, and then they call us, you know. So there's different ways that we find these dogs in the shelters. For example, we have a place in South Dakota that's what they do. They go around the shelters, they rescue all of these dogs, and then find jobs for them. And so when they find one that they feel would work for us, they video it, the screening process, send us the video, our trainers review it and say, yes, it looks like it has what we want, and then they ship it out to us.
That's absolutely wonderful. And one of the things I like about your Facebook feed is that when you guys do rescue a dog, you actually highlight it on Facebook. And you get to see, like, almost immediately when these dogs are actually taken out of this, awful environment of being in a shelter or something like that and brought into the fold and, like you said, given a job. And it just makes them so happy. It's absolutely wonderful. A listener asked, are there certain breeds that you look for, or is it more just the temperament of the dog that you're looking for?
Well, it's actually the temperament. However, particular breeds tend to have that temperament. And they're the working dogs, the Labs, Golden Retrievers, Border Collies, German Shepherds, Malinois, you know, and then even mixes of those breeds. But what really, really matters is the extreme drive, the intensity, the athleticism, and the focus of the dogs. That's what we're looking for. And those are the traits that many times makes them end up in the shelters.
Right, absolutely. And I've got a lab that even at 7 has still got an awful lot of intensity, athleticism, and focus. And he requires, you know, playing with him. You have to take him outside and such. So I can see how a dog like that might be too much, you know, especially if you have young kids or something like that. So so that's absolutely wonderful. Now, how are these different from other working dogs? What's special about them?
Well, the big thing is they are specifically trained to work in a disaster environment. And a lot of dogs are not comfortable in that environment. They're, you know, they would rather be running across a nice grassy park than across rubble, you know. And it's not natural for a dog to climb ladders and rappel off of buildings. And these dogs are the type of dogs that love that.
Right.
They're also, it's one of the few areas that actually has a national certification, you know, and it is a FEMA certification, and there's also state certification that mimics, you know, it's identical to the FEMA certification. So that's very important. They do not deploy without that standard, if you will.
Right.
And then the other thing is they are constantly searching off-leash. And that's, you know, all dogs don't work off-leash. And to be able, so the level of training to do that is very high because you need to be able to have the dog enough independence and enough, you know, wanting to go out and doing it by himself, but at the same time enough control to keep the dog safe. So it's a fine balance you're working on there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, on your Facebook page and on your website, you have actual video of some of the things these dogs are doing. And it is nothing short of miraculous. You know, to me, the conditions that they're actually working in and the agility things that you actually can train them to do. I have to say I was completely blown away and impressed when I came out to the National Training Center and got a chance to see these dogs working firsthand. But you can go to your website or to Facebook and actually see pictures of these. So now we got a few questions from our listeners. On average, how long can a dog serve as a search dog?
Oh, that's a very good question. They usually get their certification somewhere between 2 and 3 years old, and the average retirement age for these dogs is about 10 years old. So you're looking at a, you know, 6, 7, 8 year window.
Yeah, which is the vast majority of the dog's, you know, life. So that's great that you get that much, you know, you're going to put that much effort into it. And these dogs are so happy in doing what they do. So it's wonderful that they can do it as long as they, you know, they can. Another listener question, does a search dog have any problem changing loyalty from the original trainer to the final handler?
That's another very good question.
That is a good question, yeah.
I would not say it's a problem at all, but there is an amount of time that it takes because in order to do this, you have to develop a relationship of trust, and that doesn't just come day one. So considering the dogs are coming from shelters and some of the backgrounds, they might have been returned, you know, 7 times. So when they get to our training center, they're actually, for the, you know, really first time in their lives, a lot of times, they're getting a routine, you know, and they love that, their structure. And they know what's going to happen, you know, each day. And so then here comes a handler. And now that handler is, you know, taking them to a whole new lifestyle. And so now they get integrated into a family, which many times they haven't had that. Right. And they actually get 2 families. They get the fire department family because the dog goes to work every day with the firefighter and then goes back home with him. So it does take, you know, a few months to really start developing that fine-tuned relationship. Any one of our trainers could pass the prerequisite for FEMA certification, you know, when the dogs are handed over, but that handler cannot do that because that relationship hasn't been developed. But ultimately, I can tell you that at the end of the day, the bond that you get with your partner cannot be broken. So the dog will do fine adjusting.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the actual training process. And you're not just training the dogs. You're training the handlers and the dog and the handler together as a team. Exactly.
<Yes.
laughs> Exactly. Now, this is kind of an interesting question. How does does working as a search dog affect the dog's anticipated lifespan due to exposures from the types of area in which they work?
That question came out a lot after the World Trade Center.
I'll bet.
And for the first time, and since then, every deployment they do this, they actually did a long-term study. And I know my partner was part of that. And it's every year we would send in blood work and chest x-rays, you know, and certain questionnaires. And what came out of it is the answer is no, it really doesn't. Because the dogs have, unfortunately, you know, such a short lifespan anyway.
Right.
And the way they process, they're really, all of the canines that have passed since then were in the normal range.
Right.
I was delighted to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I always wonder about the psychological effect of these. But I have to say that I had asked Wilma that question before I came out to the National Training Center to actually watch the dogs work. And these dogs are absolutely loving every minute of it. I mean, they are so engaged in what they're doing and so happy to be doing what they're doing. It's still probably a question worth asking, but I got to tell you firsthand, these dogs just live for what they do.
Oh, they should do. It's the retirement, just like humans, that's hard on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would think it would be really hard on them. You got to keep them with some kind of a job around the house.
Absolutely. I taught mine to find my car keys after she retired as a search dog. It kept her mind engaged, and I always knew where my keys were.
Yeah, what you got to teach them is to drive the kids around to all their various activities.
Oh, but then the handler wouldn't have a job.
Oh, well, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, now, one of our big roles is the chauffeur.
Yeah, that's true. How much does it actually cost to train a search team?
That's a good question. It can cost up to $15,000 to recruit and train one team. And we do that solely through donations. You know, we're nonprofit and we receive no government funding. So everything we do is from people across this country, you know, individuals, companies, private foundations. So the support, all you know, from all over the country has been amazing, and we couldn't do it without that.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, the I would imagine just because of that, something like the Amazon Smile thing is just huge. And it also talks on your Facebook and on your website about how you can donate. You have, you know, special things, events and such that you're doing as well. So it's just extremely important. Now, walk us through, we only have about 2 minutes to break, but the process of training cycle. How long does it usually take to train a dog?
It takes 6 to 8 months to get the dog ready to be paired with a handler.
Okay, and is that all done at SDF or is that just the beginning?
Nope, that's all done at our training center.
Okay, and so then the handlers come in later and then you start training the dogs with the handler. So that 6 to 8 months is really just training the dog, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And when we come back, we need to go to break now. When we come back, I want to talk about the specifics of training them to recognize smells and such. I think this is the real detail of the training that people are really fascinated with. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with the wonderful Deborah Tosh from the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation. And we're going to go to break now, but we'll be right back.
News, opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Join Dr. Linda Iniguez every week for the Shrink Wrap Forum. This show discusses topics that you wouldn't normally hear in today's media. In the forum, virtually no topic is off limits. We invite you to join us and participate or dive into the stream where we value independent thought, talk to those people that are making a difference, and explore ideas considered outside the box. The Shrink Wrap Forum can be heard live every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing? Craving more leads in your business? Tune into the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill. I'm here with Deborah Tosh, and we're talking about training. So, Deborah, here's something I always wondered is, you know, you think about these sites, you know, we all see the tornadoes that go through town and everything. How do you actually train a dog to recognize the smells of a live human and not get distracted by all those other scents around them?
Well, we start out, it's called a barrel lineup. If you can picture a lot of barrels, maybe 7 or 8 of them in a row, and the dog, as it goes up and sniffs at each one, the lid has a little hole in it. When the dog puts his nose in the one with the human, a toy magically pops out.
Ah.
And he gets to tug with the toy. So he's associating the smell of humans with tugging and having a lot of fun. Then when he's really good at that, then we make him bark before the toy comes out, because that's how the handler recognizes when their dog finds somebody, is the dog stays there and barks until the handler gets there. So we add the bark. Then we take the barrels and put them on a rubble pile and do it all over again. And then when the dog is doing it with the barrels on the rubble pile, then we leave the barrels, but we put the human, we bury the human underneath the rubble. And so for the dog, it's almost like hide and seek. I go out there, I find the person, and I get to play with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the handler the dog is playing with, it's the person they find. And so that's the motivation for the dog to go out and find that person. That's where the fun happens.
I would imagine. It's funny. I can't get my dog to do anything unless I give him a hot dog. I can't imagine him actually playing at this at age 7 for anything other than a hot dog.
Well, see, that's why we when we screen the dogs, they have to be obsessed with toys.
Right.
You know, because that is the reward. If we used hot dogs and then say you had to go on a disaster to a grocery store full of hot dogs, well, then the dog's going to be self-rewarding on the hot dogs instead of looking for the person. And so
that's exactly what he did, too.
Yep, exactly. So the toy has to mean more to the dog than the hot dogs. And the dog has learned that none of that other stuff, even people standing on a pile, because when they take the certification, there's evaluators. And when you go on disasters, there's other workers. The dog has been taught that if the dog goes up to any of those people, he doesn't get his toy. The only time he gets his toy is when he finds that human scent that nobody can see.
Right. Yeah, and it's amazing. They can smell something like, 16 feet down in concrete. I mean, it's just
Absolutely. Really
something what they can do. Now, what are the skills that, in terms of FEMA certification, what are the skills that the dogs and the handlers have to show?
Well, before they can even take their certification test, they have to do a prerequisite, and that is obedience, agility, the ability to direct the dog to different places, and to show that the dog can stay and bark at a human for 30 seconds. And then they have to do a 2-person search on a rubble pile. Once they get signed off on all of that, then they get to take the actual certification, and that is 2 rubble piles up to 15,000 square feet, which is a good-sized rubble pile. And they have 20 minutes to tell the evaluators how many people are in that pile, and if the dog alerts on clothing or food, it's an automatic failure.
Oh. So they've got to be able to smell the real person. Now, what happens to the dogs who aren't able to complete the training or certification process?
I can speak for the foundation. All of the dogs that we rescue that do not complete it, we have a program called our Lifetime Care Commitment, and that is we make sure that they don't go back to a shelter. Just because they didn't make it through the program doesn't mean they deserve to go back.
Right.
So we find homes for them, and we follow them until the end of their life. We make sure they're still doing well. If for some reason a family that, you know, took the dog into its home, circumstances sometimes, you know, dictate they can no longer keep it, it comes back to us, and we find it in another home.
This is what makes your organization just so amazing to me, is that if the dog, you know, fails the training, they get taken care of. If they pass the training and now they're after 10, you know, they're too old to continue, you know, the work, you still take care of them. There's really no bad thing here that goes on with the dog. So I just think it's absolutely wonderful that you guys do that. Now, what's the ongoing training certification process? So I would assume once they get certified that that's probably an ongoing process.
It is. Just because they're certified doesn't mean they can just stop and wait for a deployment to happen. Every week they're still out there, the team's on rubble and training. That's very important to keep, you know, the skills up and right. to keep the dog in shape as well. For certification, they have to recertify every 3 years as a team just to show that they're still able to go out and do the job.
Yeah, and that's a test of not just the dog, but the handler and the dog working together.
Absolutely. You certify as a team.
Right.
So if I certify with one dog and you certify with another dog, I cannot deploy with your dog.
Exactly.
Because we have not been able to show that we can work as that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just got to be really highly motivating to the firefighters to make sure that they're being able to keep up with the dogs as well.
Absolutely.
Now, I've gotten this question from quite a few listeners. Everybody always worries about the little doggies when they're, you know, on rubble, you know, real rubble because they've deployed to a scene. Do the dogs ever wear protective gear?
They do when needed, but that is very rare. Dogs, with their wonderful four-wheel drive and their ability to splay their pads, you know, spread mm-hmm. them out, they can actually, the way they walk, they can sense that they're getting ready to, say, step on a nail, you know, and the second they feel, they can adjust. And so the areas you would think the dogs needed to wear booties, they very rarely need to. If they were sharp, you know, shards of glass, or they were walking through something that, you know, you wouldn't want them to absorb, we would put booties on them, and we certainly train the dogs with booties so that it's not strange if it's needed. But mm-hmm. I can tell you, when I was at the World Trade Center, my dog never wore booties because you're constantly weighing which is the safest. You know, you want them to be able to have that feel, that natural ability. And so you're constantly, as the handler, being the dog's advocate, you're asking yourself, what's best for the dog in this situation? And with her, came down, and all of the dogs primarily that were trained in that environment, they just did not wear booties, and there were no injuries.
All right. Well, that's really something. And I think I recall hearing when I was out watching the dogs do searching that one of the qualifications, the handler have to be able to carry like 50 pounds worth of gear for the dogs at all times, just in case the dog needs water or the booties or whatever. I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly or not.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of gear.
It's a lot of gear. And you need to, when you deploy, you know, each human has to carry enough and be self-sufficient for 72 hours when you go on a FEMA deployment. Well, with the canine handler, it's not just the, you know, yourself. You've got to carry extra water and, like you said, the food, the toys, and the canine's gear as well.
Right.
So it's just
Absolutely.
Something that you get used to.
Yeah, like you don't carry enough as a firefighter to begin with. Now, I want to switch gears here a little bit and talk about the National Training Center. We've been talking a lot about what the dogs have to be able to do in terms of navigating on different kinds of surfaces and stuff. And I remember reading before you had the National Training Center, you guys were driving like 2,000 miles a month to find rubble piles. Now, give us an update, because there's been a lot happening in terms of Disaster City going on at the National Training Center, right?
Absolutely. We were very fortunate to be part of a program called Innovative Readiness Training, and it is where the military reservists, every year they're required to do 2 to 3 weeks of training as, you know, part of being a reservist. And they now have a program that rather than just sending them to a base and getting the same training year after year, they actually find projects, real projects in the communities to help train them. And so we are building an area called Search City, which has, you know, one-story house, two-story, one that's all tilted, a motel, convenience store, trailer park, an overturned parking lot, things like that. And so they were out for about 5 months and was able to help us start to build that. So it was really wonderful to see, because you saw the Army and the Navy getting this wonderful training in building and things that they need to do when they deploy. So while they're getting their training, they were helping us build the props that will get up, you know, give handlers all over the world training. So it was a beautiful partnership.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you just never know what you're actually going to come upon. There's no such thing as any two disasters really being exactly the same. So having all of these different kinds of things, I would imagine it keeps the dogs more engaged as well, because, you know, they don't get used to something, you know, the same rubble pile over and over again either.
Exactly. And that's very important. All of the search scenarios that we will be building will, you know, we'll be able to change them. So if you come in January of 2015 and you come back in June of 2015, it will be a totally different experience for both the handler and the dog.
Wow, that is just something. My God, I'm just so, there's no end of how impressed I am with your organization. It's just really something.
Thank you.
And getting to know you guys, it shouldn't be surprising to me, you know, at all. So let's talk about how a business or individual can actually sponsor a search dog. You know, what does it cost? How long does it take? What do you have to do?
Well, in order to sponsor a dog's training, it is $10,000, and it can be paid over 2 years. And what you get for that is you get a dog that you're able to follow that dog's progress through its initial training, and then the opportunity to come out and watch the graduation, and, you know, when the dog gets paired with his handler. And then you get, you know, the calls from the rubble pile from the handler saying, "We just passed our certification."
Yay!
So yeah, or a call from the office before it goes out, "Hey, your dog just got deployed." So you get to follow that dog throughout its career.
And so when we come back, guess who we're going to talk about?
Could it be
Little Jackson? This has been one of the greatest joys of my life, is sponsoring a search dog, I got to tell you. So I'll tell you all about that. We have to go to break right now. But when we come back, we're going to talk about Little Jackson. So this is Pam Hill, and we'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for Matters of Design with celebrity designer Dimitri Christian Skourakis as he explores the dynamics of interior decorating. Imagine your personal style and ideas being shaped by our guest experts as they highlight a mixture of home furnishings, lighting, textiles, and fashion from around the world. If you've ever had difficulty trying to plan how to do it yourself, why not collaborate with a designer and wind up with results like you've never dreamed of? Matters of Design can be heard live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Dogs Rock Radio with Pamela Hill. If you have a comment or question, please send us an email to dogsrockradio@gmail.com. That's dogsrockradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill. I'm here with Deborah Tosh. And we were just about ready to get an update on little Jackson.
Yep, just Jackson is wonderful. He came to us. He's one of those that was actually did not come from a rescue. You had asked earlier if somebody could, you know, donate a dog. Jackson was given to a trainer here in California because the family just could not handle him. He was just way too much to have around the kids. So she took him and began, you know, putting some obedience. And then she's like, oh, boy, this dog needs a job. And so she's been a long-term supporter. So she evaluated him, and he passed with flying colors. And this year he's going to be paired with this handler. And just in the office, we get reports from our trainers. And I'll just give you a couple little snippets from the last report. He is a rock star in direction and control. He's able to take longer patterns, and he really pays close attention to his handler. He's very good with new handlers. He still needs to slow down in agility.
Oh, because he's Jackson. Just,
oh, that, he just loves it. And it's like, okay, slow it down, Jackson. It's all about control here, not speed. And his searching is just wonderful, you know.
What
he's
a
really, so he's doing two victims on the rubble, and he's just, here's what they say, he's such a fun dog who is incredibly smart. He's a quick thinker. Pardon?
I can't wait to meet him. I hope I get to come out when he is paired in November. And I just want to say, just personally, I've had so much fun sponsoring this. You know, I did like a whole thing on Facebook where I, you know, had different dogs people got to select from. And, you know, I'm doing contributing funds on my website as well. I mean, this has just been so much fun. I love it when I, you know, turn my email on in the morning and get an email with new pictures of him or your little updates. It's just so much fun, you know, just to have this experience. So I would really, really highly recommend this as an experience for a business or an individual. You guys really go out of your way to make it an experience. So it's not just a matter of slapping some money down and that's it. You guys really, this is what you do so well, is you get people really engaged in the SDF. And I think that that's really important, and it says a lot about you guys as an organization.
Thank you.
So. Yeah, now I want to talk about September is the Search Dog Foundation's We Have Not Forgotten Month. So I want to make sure we have some time to talk about that. So why don't you explain what that is?
Sure. It's really a time for us, you know, to reflect on all of the, you know, first responders that serve this country. Some people think it's just about 9/11. It's not. It's for all of the first responders that have responded to all types of disasters. And it's also a chance to, for us not to forget our, you know, humble roots as an organization. We started as a very small, you know, organization and have grown. And we don't want to forget where we came from. And then just the incredible humans and canines that dedicate their lives to saving others. And it's just, it's our way of honoring all of them. And this year, we're doing something a little different. We're honoring our history and our service to this country by paying tribute to our very first three canine search teams, Randy Gross and Dusty, Rickley and Anna, and Rob Seema and Ace. They were our first three handlers from Sacramento, California. All three of the dogs were rescued golden retrievers, and they made such a difference in canine disaster search in this country. And we want to honor them this September. And if it hadn't been for these original test teams, you know, we may not exist the way we are now. What if, you know, something hadn't worked? And they just really got us to where we are today. And so right now, since we've, you know, 112 disasters later, we're honoring the first three. And so what we're doing is challenging our supporters all over the country to help us recruit and train the next three canine search teams. So during the month of September, we're trying to raise $30,000 by the end of September. In this way, you know, we just keep the sacrifices of all these animals and humans alive in our hearts and say to the world that we have not forgotten.
And this affects everybody across the United States. I mean, this isn't just good for the five, you know, places where these dogs are currently being deployed. I mean, this affects everybody because it's setting the stage for building something that is a national right now, because you guys could be deployed anywhere. I mean, I'm in Illinois, and, you know, you guys could absolutely be deployed to Illinois, and you have been, I believe, in Illinois or Missouri during some of the tornadoes. So this really does affect everyone.
Right. These FEMA teams can go anywhere in the country. And then two of the FEMA teams can also go international, which we've got, you know, now Ivan in Virginia. He could end up going to another Haiti.
Right. Absolutely. Is there a different certification for domestic versus international? Is that actually a different certification, or is it just the availability of the handler to go?
It depends on who gets the contract through the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance. And right now it's L.A. County and Virginia, Fairfax, Virginia. They're the ones so there's extra, it's not a different certification, but there's a lot of different training involved, you know, additional training.
Okay. Yeah, because I would imagine the conditions are, like, you know, you think about Haiti, I mean, it's got to be, I just can't even imagine the conditions down there, not just for the handler, but for the dogs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your most memorable deployment for you personally?
I would have to say it would be the World Trade Center. And that would be because, number one, that was my first one. But it was the magnitude of it. And when you're there and searching those areas and you see, you know, a pair of shoes under somebody's desk, it makes you realize that those people woke up that morning just like any other morning, go get in the car, go to work just like any other day. And it taught me life is just too short. You know,
right.
You need to live every day like it's going to be your last. And it's also my motivation for this training center, because I want teams from all over the world to come out there and get the training they need to do a deployment like that. And I want them to get that training at the training center, not on the job. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, and you were a member of that, you know, of that community. I mean, I haven't been a firefighter for a gazillion years, but, you know, I mean, you take that stuff personally when that's a lot of the people that were, you know, injured and certainly killed in there were people, you know, the sheepdogs going in to do the thing that nobody else wants to do, which is run into a building that's on fire. So it's that had to mean a lot to you personally as well, I would imagine.
But you also feel honored to be there and to help those families and those communities.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe that was your first deployment. Man, that was just, you know, still that just shatters people after all these years. So so thank you so much for your service, Deborah, really. Now, what is, just quickly, what's the biggest life lesson you've learned working with the dogs?
Well, so you know, the deployments have taught me live life to the fullest. And what I've learned working with the dogs is to be able to give complete trust, you know, and to have a very close relationship, meaning every day you should treasure those that are important to you, because just, you know, I lost Abby, and that was, you know, that was tough, of course. But to be able to reflect back and say, look how much she gave me. The bond that you develop with a canine partner is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And just to be able to completely give yourself to another living creature, whether it's human, animal, that what a great lesson to take away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exactly why I'm doing this show, because I think the connection that we have with dogs is just, it's just not like anything else. You know, that we have in this world. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today. Just quickly remind people where they can go to get more information about the Search Dog Foundation.
Sure. The easiest is to go to the website, searchdogfoundation.org, and from there you can link to our Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, and be sure to go to
the deployments
Facebook.
We've been on.
Yes. Yeah, I love your Facebook feed. So thank you for joining us this week, everyone, all the listeners. And next week, we will be joined by Kira Sundance, an internationally known stunt dog trainer. She's a really, really fun person. Can't wait to have her on. We're going to talk about teaching your kids to teach your dog some cool new tricks that she has in her new book. So until then, don't forget to wag more, bark less, and hug your dog as often as you can. Safe travels, everyone.
That's all we can cover for this week's show. Please be sure to join Pamela Hill for another edition of Dogs Rock Radio next Monday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Now, get outside and enjoy the fresh air with your best friend.